I'm Marco Werman, and you're with The World. Family life, as many of you probably know well, is demanding, but it can be especially fraught in the pressure cooker that is modern Israel. Israeli author Etgar Keret delves into this in his new memoir, The 7 Good Years. The book explores the complexities of his family's relationships over the course of 7 recent years, when they often parted ways over issues like politics and religion. Keret, for example, is a defiant atheist, but his ultra-Orthodox sister is forbidden on religious grounds to read his books. So when Keret wrote the children's book, Dad Runs Away with the Circus, he ensured a special single copy of the publication was made just for his sister's family. He says he hoped their rabbi would permit his sister's kids to read it.
In my contract with the publishing house, they had to make one, like, extra kosher copy, you know, where all the characters have long sleeves, in which there will be nothing that, you know, that can be seen as not proper from a religious point of view.
So that's what extra kosher reading material means.
Yes, it's kind of a handmade copy, you know. Let's say there are a couple kissing in one of the pages, so this was kind of covered with white paint, so it won't exist in their copy.
Mm, sounds like you really wanted her to read this.
I wanted mostly her children to read it, you know, so they can communicate with what I'm doing. And when you present such a book, then my sister had to show it to a rabbi and ask him if it's okay for them to read it. And he said, no, I mean, the book may be kind of kosher, you know, there may be nothing unreligious in it. But the entire concept of a father who leaves his family is something that is against our values, so you can't even show it to them. So sadly, I still have the copy in my home and they haven't read it.
Wow, man. What does that tell us about this ultra-Orthodox world?
There is this kind of tendency to demonize the ultra-Orthodox and to kind of present them as like the major problem in Israel. And maybe because of my system, maybe because I know this word very, very well, I don't see it as a big problem. They're like, I don't know, the Amish, you know, population in the U.S. Mm. In that sense that they say, you know what, we don't want to be a part of the country. We just live here, you know, we will do the minimum we need, but we want to have to live autonomous lives.
So this is the reality you really kick around in The 7 Good Years, and you've put together actually a playlist linking 7 songs to the 7 chapters or years in this book. These are songs you listened to when you were writing?
It's kind of in hindsight, I thought about each year, what does it sound like? You know, this is the year of kind of parenthood. This is the year of in which I travel a lot around the world. This is the year where my father becomes ill. So it's very much like a movie, you know. First you shoot the movie, then you think about the soundtrack.
So the first time a music supervisor is pulled in for a memoir. Year number 3 is the song Papoutai by Stromae, the wonderful retro Belgian singer. It's a bit of a riff on parenting. Well, as Stromae says in the song, anyone can teach you how to make a baby, but who can teach us how to make a father? Etgar Keret, are you getting better at it?
I'm getting better at it, but again, it seems like such a huge responsibility that you're being plunged into, because when you're a father, you're an interface between your son and the world, and your son asks you all kind of questions. And all those questions before my son was born, I would say to myself, this happens because the world sucks, because people are assholes, you know. But when your 5-year-old son asks you, you want to give him a better answer. You want to make him believe in life. You want to make him believe in people. And this really calls for real transformation from your own side. You must change, you know. If you won't change, then your child isn't going to buy it.
Mm. It does get easier, I can assure you, but I'm also going to say it does get harder. One experience I don't have to deal with, though, is my kid having to join the military. Your son, Lev, is required, as you said, by law to serve in Israel in the military. This is one of the stories in the 7 Good Years. How much has this whole issue come between you and your wife?
My wife, since his birth, said he's not going to go to the army. You know, it comes from this kind of deep fear. You don't want to put your son in danger, and especially when, you know, your political ideas are very different from the ideas of the government. The only fear is not of him being hurt. There are more fears of him being corrupted, of him hurting other people, of him losing his morals. But on the other hand, you know, when you live in Israel, serving in the army is not a luxury, it's a necessity. And you can also argue that if only the people who want their children to serve in the army, or if only the people who seek that conflict and have no ambiguity about it will send the people there, then the army will become worse and the country will become worse. And by sending good people to that army. I served in the army. I'm not saying I'm a good person, but my political ideas were such that, you know, that I could serve in an army unit, and when I would have a weekend break, I would take off my uniform and demonstrate against the government or the army that I served in. You know, this is, there's something in the nature of Israel that many things are kind of like an oxymoron, you know.
But you served basically because you saw it as a kind of communal national responsibility.
Yeah, and because I thought that, you know, that better that it would be me than somebody who may have a less liberal or more racist point of view of things. So I thought it's good that I'll be there, that if somebody would want to do something, maybe I can stop him, you know, maybe I can affect that. The moment that you say, let's leave the army to people who are okay with violence and have no remorse, then, you know, I'm not sure that's the most responsible decision to take.
So, Etgar Keret, these 7 years were obviously important in your life, defined by the birth of your son, the death of your dad. But in Israel, if you had picked any 7 consecutive years, do you think the daily routines and thoughts and observations would have been as absurd and funny?
I write about being a father, and I write about being a child, and I think that those tasks are difficult all over the world. But I think that, you know, they're even more difficult, you know, when you live in a very violent and sometimes morally challenging place like Israel. I think that these 7 years were 7 years of change in the Israeli society. I think 7 years ago, freedom of speech was a given and not something that people in our government would debate about. And sadly, as in the Bible, after the 7 good years, 7 bad years come, and I can already feel them.
You also write of you sitting on the bench in the maternity ward after almost all the hospital staff has abandoned your wife to treat terrorist victims in the ER. Did you ever think that having a kid was sort of an irrational vote of confidence in the future?
Well, I remember a conversation that I had with my mother, who is a Holocaust survivor, and I said to her, it was during the Second Intifada, I said to her, you know, with the political situation here, you know, I feel that it may be irresponsible to have a kid. And my mother said, you know, if I could have you after the Holocaust and believe things can get better, I think you can find some optimism in you, you know. It was a strong argument.
Etgar Keret's new memoir is called The 7 Good Years. Wonderful to meet you. Thanks for talking with us.
Well, thank you very much.